show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past.
It's a place where I met my wife and my three children were born. And to this day, I'm so proud to call KC home.
A show that looks at Kansas City baseball's present.
Alex with a basket catch. They're going to send the runner. His throw, a great one! Alex Gordon with a tremendous Gold Glove play.
And a show that looks at Kansas City baseball's future.
With the fifth selection of the 2012 first-year player draft, the Kansas City Royals select Kyle Zimmer.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Welcome into the very first Kansas City Baseball Vault podcast. That's right, the Royal Man Report is gone, and Kansas City Baseball Vault is gone because the Historical Society didn't want to pay any more money to put us on the radio. So we're done with 1510, and the Royal Man Report guys have gotten back together. It's Jeff Herr, Michael Engel, and myself, and we're slightly homeless right now. We don't have a studio, so we're bringing you this broadcast by Google Hangout, and are going to do so for the foreseeable future.
You get see this way, you get three man caves for the price of one.
Well, mine's just my bedroom wall. Maybe someday I'll actually do this from the kitchen or from the dining room where my actual like man cave stuff is. But for now, you get my bedroom wall. Anyways, this is going to be the podcast that you've gotten for the past year and a half. It's going to be the Kansas City Baseball Vault, no longer the Royal Man Report, so that maybe someday we can get it back on the radio with a name that they're more likely to work with. And then, although we had promised you nothing other than baseball, at least in the live cast you're going to get the Echo Sports Report as well at the end. What I will try to do once I record this is I will, once I get done with the post edit, I will try to split the Echo Sports Report off and keep it as its own show no matter how long it may be. I'm sorry if my screen, for those of you watching live, I'm sorry for my screen being a little bumpy. My computer is sitting on my lap, so you'll have to deal with it.
It's a little creepy.
Alrighty, so let's get started here. The vault ended on probably about as high of a note as you could. We had Don Larson on. I mean, perfect game for a perfect way to end a perfect show. So,
not bad.
It was a pretty good show, I thought.
He was pretty fun, actually. I thought it was pretty interesting. He was, you know, I think he said damn about five times, which is a little bit...
Oh, I think he said that. I think he said damn five times in one sentence, and then I'm sure they did it on purpose, but the very end of the episode when Chris is trying to give out his heartfelt remarks, 1510 decided to turn up the speed of the recording and made us all sound like chipmunks, so that was kind of fun, too.
I couldn't help but laugh when that happened.
I'm sure that was slightly intentional. So we'll say it was intentional and fun, but I'm not so sure. So,
I think it was, I mean, we never had any issues like that any other show. It just happens to be in the last minute.
Yeah. Of the last show.
Yeah. Well played, Union. Well played.
And Chris has had it coming from them for a while, so.
Yeah. It's true.
So I guess as far as we're concerned, for the future going ahead, instead of having multiple shows on the Echo Network, you're going to get the KC Baseball Vault, and you're going to get it as it once was, just Jeff Herr, Michael Engel, and Troy Olson. We're going to have guests that are available via Google Talk for now until I can figure out if I can work this soundboard that Chris has loaned me in order to run other calls like Skype and stuff, but I'm not positive on how to do that at this time, so I will also look into the add-on apps that Google Hangouts have, and maybe we can get it all figured out. But that's kind of the background on where we're going forward and where we've been. Let's talk about where we are, which is the Royals were 17-11 in August, the first winning August since 2000, best August since 1991. How excited are we about this, Jeff?
I'm kind of trying to temper my excitement because I feel like we've been here before. When was it? 2009, when they were like 75-87 and they had a great August and September and it was... Or a great September, and it was, next year is going to be the year, and it's all going to happen again. And So I think it's a good sign, you know, because it means the team hasn't given up. But then you also look at, well, maybe some of the other teams have given up and the Royals are just reaping the benefits, and now we're in a situation of, are we just going to rinse repeat over and over again and say, hey, you know what, we had a 12-game losing streak and there was a 7-19 July, and if you wipe that out, we were a good baseball team, so we don't need to change anything. We just need to go in the next season and keep doing what we're doing. And that's not going to solve the problems, because there are still problems that this organization, that this team has, and it's going to be more than just signing a Jeremy Guthrie who started to pitch better, and it's going to be more than just bringing up a Jake Odorizzi or a Will Myers. You know, there's more changes that need to be made, but when you have a good month like this, are they going to make them is the question. I don't know. That's my concern.
What I see is, you know, the Royals, it's a good month, but they won 5 games out of 6 against the White Sox, first place team in the division. They just swept the Tigers. So they're playing good teams. You know, they were competitive against the Rays. They split a series with the Orioles, who are fighting for a playoff spot as well. You know, I think they've beaten some good teams. I don't think people are really phoning it in. But it's kind of, that's kind of been the trend all year for the Royals, is they played better against teams above 500 for some reason. I don't know why. You'd think it'd be the opposite. They'd beat up on the bad teams, but for whatever reason, the Twins and the Mariners seem to have their number. The biggest thing this month is the starting pitching has been actually good. Joel Goldberg put out a tweet 2 days ago. From April through July, the Royals starters went 7 or more innings 14 times total in all of those months. In August, they did that 13 times. So that's something you can take later into the off season and say, you know, this is what we need. It's, you know, it's not any different than this past off season where we needed starting pitching, but more than any, you know, it shows what happens when you get actual good starting pitching. You know, you have some depth there and you're not relying on spot starts.
Dave Darby giving me a little hell for my hair. You know, I'm sitting in my bedroom. Give me a break here.
As long as you're wearing pants.
He very well could have just gotten up, just rolled over, picked up his laptop, and started the show.
I've been awake for a little while, but I think I moved out of bed long enough to put shorts on and a t-shirt, because frankly, we just don't need to broadcast that across YouTube. So.
No, we don't. We certainly don't. Nobody wants to see that.
I guess I should have mentioned as well, the reason that we're doing this show on Google Hangout is because, for the time being, Chris Kamler is no longer with us. He is taking care of some personal matters, and we'll see what the future holds. Chris is always welcome back for multiple reasons, you know, not just because we want to use the man cave, but because Chris is a friend, and he's got some things to figure out, and we hope to get him back soon. Continuing on with the Royals talk, how much of this, in your guys' opinion, has to do with the getting rid of guys like Jonathan Sanchez, Unioneski Betancourt, and these others that they've decided are the problem children of the team? Sanchez on the DL now hasn't changed at all in Colorado. He still sucks out there. Jeremy Guthrie's been a lot better. But if you take Guthrie out of the picture and you just say this team didn't have Sanchez all year and they threw in Will Smith all year, you know, they brought him up to begin the year and he was, or at the point of injuries, he became a permanent part of this rotation. Is there a way that this team overcomes that 12-game losing streak if Sanchez isn't part of it? If that was he such without obviously we're not in the Royals clubhouses, but is there anything that could be said for him being such a detriment to this team in the clubhouse that it played over to the field in that way, Mike?
I don't know. I mean, whenever you're talking about team chemistry and things like that, you can't really measure it. You just kind of have to observe it. I think there's probably an effect, but I don't know that it's enough that, okay, they're going to win 18 games in August, they're going to win 18 games in September, and everything looks great. You know, there's probably a little bit to it. You know, Sanchez was a guy, you know, every fifth day, you didn't know if you were going to see that starter go into the second inning. You know, he was so bad in so many starts. There's no way to build any momentum as a team when, you know, you could go on a 4-game winning streak and then you get to Sanchez and it's a brick wall. So there's probably a little bit of morale with that change, and then Guthrie comes in and, you know, he seems like an upbeat guy. He seems like a good guy. He gets along with people. You know, if you follow him on Twitter, the other day he and Danny Duffy were reciting lyrics to like Backstreet Boys songs, like just in their mentions. It's like, okay. So, you know, I think he's probably better for the clubhouse. But even if you left him out, you put in somebody like Will Smith. Will Smith is the classic replacement player, you know, somebody that you just pull in from Omaha, you put him in there, and gives you zero war, but, you know, he doesn't give you negative like Sanchez, and Sanchez was pretty terrible. Then they've moved Unieski Betancourt, and, you know, I don't know. I think he was such an out machine at the plate and not in the field that you can't do anything but benefit from moving him. So, but I think there's a little bit in play chemistry wise, but I don't know if it's enough to get them, you know, winning August. I think a lot of that is just the starting pitching.
Well, Mike, you and Clint Scholes are both big haters of the idea that the clubhouse chemistry matters and having good guys matters.
I don't think it's as important as talent. I mean, you look at teams like the A's in the 70s and they hated each other. The Yankees in the early 80s, they hated each other, but they were successful. You know, talent beats a lot of a good feeling and things like that. You know, I think it's just a team that didn't have a lot of talent and at least in those spots, and they brought in guys who are at least neutral. You know, they're okay. You know, Tony Abreu's okay. Johnny Giovitella's probably okay. Jeremy Guthrie's better than Sanchez. So I think that's a big change.
I wonder if Jeremy Guthrie will have that put on his headstone, better than Sanchez.
I could do that for mine.
Engel. I was going to say, I could put that on my headstone. I mean, I think back to the chemistry thing, it's always been kind of a nebulous topic, and I actually got into a big discussion, this is before the season even started, but with Nick Scott, I remember, on Twitter about it, of how weird, right?
Happens.
I know. But, like, how much does it actually matter? And his point was, bad teams harp a lot about chemistry. And ultimately, that's true, but it's kind of a chicken and the egg type of scenario. You know, is it the chemistry that's bad that makes the team bad, or is it the fact that the team just stinks, and so therefore the chemistry is viewed to be bad type of a thing? You know, I think ultimately it's not something that's going to affect a ton either way, but I do know that, you know, it's not good when, say, you've lost 5 games in a row, which happens even to some of the best teams. But, you know, then when you have a guy who's a Jonathan Sanchez, who maybe he's that 6th game, and you don't want to lose that 6th game in a row, and then he comes out, and whether he actually wasn't trying as hard or not is kind of up in the air. No one really knows except for Jonathan Sanchez. But the perception was out there, at least from the fans and the media, that he was not trying as hard. And if that's the case, then maybe the players have some of that perception too, and so some of them – you know, just maybe they don't have their entire focus because they're out there sitting saying, you know, what the hell is he doing out there not playing as hard? And I'm out here busting my ass. What's going on? Why does he get a pass or so on and so forth? And you just don't want to have players that don't have their entire focus or that maybe even have to worry about thinking about that kind of stuff. So on some level, I definitely think it does have an effect, but it's probably a little bit overblown by the fans and the media. But then again, you know, like I said, Jonathan Sanchez was a little bit of a special case because not only did he appear to be bad in the clubhouse, but he was just god-awful on the field. And, I mean, I don't know how much of him being gone has really helped the Royals from a chemistry standpoint, but it's definitely when Jeremy Guthrie especially goes out, but now when all 5 pitchers go out on the field, at least until they blow up, we at least think they can keep us in the game, whereas it was getting to that point with Sanchez where you knew no matter what, he wasn't going to keep you in the game. You did not have that chance to be in the game because he was just going to blow up. You knew it was going to happen, even more than like a Hochaver or something.
Well, kind of transitioning to our next topic of sweeping the Tigers, which, you know, this team has went out, they've beat the White Sox, they've beat the Tigers, they've won these big games in April, of course, or April, in August. I wish they'd win big games in April and May and June and July, which has always been the problem with this team. But, you know, that leads right into the Royals were able to beat Verlander. You know, Chen had a good game, and then I was out there for the Jeremy Guthrie game, and the nice thing about Guthrie is you look up at the scoreboard, they take him out of the game, you look up at the scoreboard, and you go, oh, we only need two pitchers to get to the ninth inning.
Yeah.
Now Tim Collins gets hit around a little bit, and you bring Aaron Crow in, but I think, you know, the plan was to go from Guthrie to Collins to Herrera. That was what they were going to do, and that's so nice that you don't have to go, oh my God, what pitchers are they going to go get from Omaha tomorrow, because we had to use 12 guys in this game. And you guys think I'm kidding, but I think there really were some games early on in the season where they used 12 pitchers and not even extra inning games. And you know, you thought Tony La Russa was your manager all of a sudden, just because looking at the box score with the number of pitchers that had to be used. How much difference as the team as a whole does it make being able to have a guy like Guthrie go deep every single time he pitches?
That's really important. I mean, it's just for all those reasons. You're not using all those bullpen guys, and you get more of a choice of when you want to use them. Like, if a guy gets chased out after 4 2/3 innings, well, you got to bring in whoever, and then you're behind it. You know, you have to bring in somebody in the sixth inning, and they're maybe pitching a little bit more than you want them to, or they're pitching in different situations. You know, if they go 7 innings and you can bring in your setup guy for the eighth inning and you bridge it right into Holland in the ninth, that's a real big benefit, because you've got guys that are just coming in, they're pitching their one inning, they're getting out. You know, that's the ideal. That's what you want to do. And it's been working for the most part. And it also helps that the Royals have probably the best young bullpen in baseball, or one of them. You know, when you look top to bottom, you know, who's the weak link on this bullpen? Is it Lewis Coleman? You know, somebody like that? I mean, he's a pretty darn good reliever. He'd be a setup type on any other team, but here he's kind of the mop-up guy in some regards. And then you get a guy like Holland, who just jumps right into the closer spot, and Herrera, who was a little shaky. He said he was nervous, but he still closed it out. So, you know, I think it's a pretty darn good bullpen, and when, you know, you get guys that go 7 innings, you can use Aaron Crow to set up one game, and then Kelvin Herrera the next game, and you know, you keep those guys fresh. And I think it's a real big benefit to have them going deep into games, because you're not wearing guys out.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a big thing. I think one of the things that I kind of always think about when you talk about how far pitchers go into games and how valuable that is, when the Rays came to town, I can't remember when it was. I want to say it was June or something. And Alex Cobb pitched against us and gave up 8 runs or something like that, and we won 8-0, or it was, I think it was Hochaver when he threw that big complete.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, Cobb lost the game 8-0 or whatever, it was 6-0, I can't remember the exact score. But he ended up pitching the whole game, and you know, they had just played like a doubleheader or something the night before, mm-hmm. and they had a bunch of pitchers that they really needed him to go the distance. And you know, even though they ended up losing, and losing pretty handily, you know, he was still able to be out there and not just completely, you know, let things get out of hand. It's like, well, they knew they had the loss, but he was able to still keep things under control and kind of get out of there without depleting their bullpen that much. And being able to have that, Luke Hochaver did that just a few nights ago when he pitched the whole game in a loss, mm-hmm. that was one-sided. And you know, I think those are the types of situations that are a little bit more valuable even than, you know, if a pitcher gives me 5 innings, but it's, you know, we're up 1-0 or something when he leaves, and I can at least handle that. It's when you have that second inning blow up that Bruce Chen has to be taken out because he gives up 7 runs. So even if your pitcher's going to lose the game or give up some damage, if he can still go the distance, I think that's when it's most valuable to the pitching staff. So, I mean, that's something that I think the Royals have really started to push, and you've kind of noticed it less later in the season. They're really pushing these guys to get in the game further, to stay deeper into the game so they don't have to eat into this bullpen. And it's becoming more and more important because they had to do it so much early in the season that, you know, now some of these bullpen arms got a lot of innings on them. So it'll be interesting to see how this last month goes and, if these starters can kind of continue this little semi-momentum they have going, because I think it could definitely help the team, definitely help their confidence, and then, you know, who knows coming in next year.
Well, Mike, let's do everybody's favorite segment from the 1510 version of the Kansas City Baseball Vault, and let's talk. I want to kind of do this a little differently today, which I'm kind of dropping on you. As we go through around the horn, as you go through each team, I've got a little bit on a couple of them, so I'll jump in as we go. But you can go ahead and start, and we'll go from there.
All right. Well, starting off, Omaha, they clinched their division between our last show and now. Their last series is going to be at Albuquerque over the next couple days, and then on Wednesday, they're going to start their playoff series. So, you know, they've been ahead all year. You know, after Will Myers got there, they've had Clint Robinson there all year. A lot of guys playing really well. Jake Odorizzi's there, and Odorizzi and Myers were the pitcher and player of the year for Omaha.
Oh.
We're losing Mike here. Bills.
Mike.
You know, they're
Mike, hold on. You're cutting out.
Got me?
Yeah, we got you back now, it sounds like. So you were talking about them starting the playoffs on 9-5, and I think we lost you right after that.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, they start the playoffs on Wednesday. They've been led by Will Myers and Jake Odorizzi. They're the pitcher and player of the year. Clint Robinson's been there all year. They've had a lot of other really good players come through, and you know, I think they're looking good for a second straight PCL championship. Double A, it's their last series of the year. They did well in the second half, but they did have, you know, Christian Colon had a good year down there. You know, Yordano Ventura got some starts in up there. Justin Marks and Michael Marriott are two guys who were pitching well down there, and they got called up to Omaha. So, you know, there's some progress there, but there wasn't a very good winning record, we'll say. So, you know, Northwest Arkansas has kind of been one of the big affiliates for the Royals over the last couple of years. Now you're seeing kind of where that talent has bumped up to AAA. Some of it is still yet to come from the lower levels. So, you know, it's still waiting on things to balance out there. But I think next year they'll have a couple guys. They'll have Ventura back there. John Lamb is probably going to start the year there. You'll have so have a good pitching staff, if nothing else.
Well, you know, and on the subject of Double A and them as a whole, I went down to Tulsa to pick up Megan, who had, you know, for those of you that follow me on Twitter, you know, my girlfriend was hospitalized in New Mexico with very bad bronchitis last week and missed her flight. And let me just tell you, do not ever fly United. They suck on a whole different kind of level.
Well, there goes
so
that
they will never be a sponsor of this program. I will guarantee you that. I wouldn't take their money because they're a bunch of you-know-whats. Anyway. But I ended up having to go pick her up in Tulsa. She has family down there. They got her from New Mexico to Tulsa, and then I went and picked her up. Well, me being the caring boyfriend I am, I get to Tulsa, realize that Northwest Arkansas is playing at Tulsa, and I make the phone call. Megan, I know you've been sick for a week and a half, but do you mind hanging out with your family for a little while when you get to town so that I can go watch a baseball game? So she was cool with it. She's really good about it. She's honestly a great girlfriend when it comes to baseball and a sport that she's not necessarily a fan of that she's supported me in. But we went. I bought a ticket. I got a little replica stadium, which is I should have brought in. It's in my car. It's a replica of Tulsa. But you know, for Double A stadiums, some of these stadiums they have dropped a ton of money into. There is a lot of money to be made in minor league baseball, and if you don't think there is, go to Northwest Arkansas. Go to the new Omaha Stadium. Go to this stadium in Tulsa. There is some big money out there in minor league baseball. These stadiums are gorgeous. And Tulsa's is no exception. It was my cover picture on Facebook, and if you're interested in seeing a couple of pictures of the stadium, my phone was dying, so I didn't take a lot. But if you want to see a few pictures of Tulsa Stadium that I took, hit me up on Twitter at Casey Royal Man, and I'll get those for you. But, yeah, you know, I went down there, and the most exciting thing of that trip or that game was because I also am a Rockies fan, which I make no secret of, and Jason Giambi and Troy Tulowitzki were rehabbing – at AA, and Giambi was actually there. And you want to talk about a guy that's a class act and an example for every Major League Baseball player, because he's a perfect example that if you apologize after doing roids, people forget about it. Nobody thinks about Jason Giambi was one of the first ones to get nailed as a steroid abuser, because it doesn't come up. He's just a baseball player now and a mediocre one that's really playing out of position.
Yeah, he's
not
very good.
but that's fine. America's accepted his apology, and that's that, and he's still got a great career in baseball. You know, meanwhile, you know, Rodriguez is being ridiculed, and he really isn't a very good baseball player anymore either. You know, they've went through their runs and what have you, but the moral of the story is Northwest Arkansas is, like you were saying, not very good right now. That team started out as one of the 2C teams. When I went down to Northwest earlier this year, I saw Odorizzi. I got an autograph from Odorizzi and Will Myers, you know. Odorizzi was the free autograph of the day at the booth. And by the time I went, or by the time Chris had went to see a game in Omaha, Will Myers and Odorizzi were up there. So, you know, that team had some really big names to start the year, and they made the natural progression to AAA. Yep. And so now this AAA team is just lights out amazing, and there's nothing left in Arkansas. You had tried to talk about Justin Marks. I think it broke up a little bit. He did not look very good. He's got a lot of control issues, and he's a guy that I really want to see something come out of, because I forget which one he's tied to, but he was either the added
piece. He was in the A's trade. He was the DeJesus trade.
Okay, so he's the piece that needs to work out in the DeJesus deal, because we all know that the other half of it.
Well, not so fast. You know, let's jump out of the minors a little bit. Vin Mazzaro had a really good August as a reliever. He'd been starting in Omaha the whole time, but he got recalled because he's been pitching really well as a reliever. There are reports that he was hitting 97 with his fastball, and with a really good slider, fastball-slider combination is pretty good for a short relief guy. So he might be seeing a career resurrection at some point based off of that. Now, he still has to go do it at the major league level, but not so fast on Mazzaro. It's not, you know, it's not a number two starter that we kind of hoped might develop, but you know, you get some value out of him. That's okay.
But are you really too upset that David DeJesus is gone if you do get a really good middle reliever type guy? Because really, that's about the value for DeJesus, especially if Justin Marks does turn into anything. And the kid's got, you know, as every Kansas City baseball player seems to, he's got great stuff. He's just got to get control over it. But he got – I'll tell you, for a double-A game, there were some great catches in the outfield. There was balls hit as hard – there was a ball hit 391 feet to the 390 mark. And somebody went up and brought it back and caught it. And there was some really amazing plays down there from that team. So a lot of great defense being shown by Northwest Arkansas and by Tulsa for that matter. But it'll be interesting to see how those guys turn out. Continuing on around the horn here.
I was just going to jump in there, if I may. Sticking with Northwest Arkansas for a second, I think something that I was kind of looking up this morning – that's a little bit of a positive note. I mean, it's one of those things where with Royals, especially when it comes to Royals minor league pitchers, it's, we're looking for just any little shred of something maybe is coming out of it. But Noel Arguez, who was a $7.5 million signing out of Cuba, I believe, and he had a decent season last year, but kind of under the radar, and then just an awful, awful start to this season. But his last five games, he's had an ERA under 3, not in each game, mind you, but total. So, you know, five games, putting together five consecutive starts like that, I mean, that's pretty solid. And, I mean, his ERA is still really, really ugly for AA, but that's an offensive league, so it gets inflated a little bit. He's still got some major worry concerns, but you know, maybe he's starting to clean things up a little bit. I don't know. He missed an entire year because of injury. Maybe he wasn't all the way back last year, and he's still recovering. I don't know. But there's, you know, that's just a little bit of something. And then Yordano Ventura is in AA. He hasn't been doing all that great, but he is down there. And so I mean, there are some players down there who we could conceivably see up in the majors at some point. And I think Yordano Ventura, even if he doesn't stick as a starter, he's definitely – I think he's somebody that the Royals can definitely get something out of, you know, whether it's a Kelvin Herrera type of a thing or a Greg Holland type of role. Either way, you know, I'd be pleased either way if that's what we could get. But I'd obviously love for him to stick as a starter, but that probably won't happen. But I think the Royals will definitely see something out of him.
I wanted to add, also down in AA at the time I was there was Jeremy Jeffers, who didn't pitch, and Manny Pena. Now, the reason I bring these guys up is I forgot to tell you guys, happy 40-man roster day.
True.
You know, it should be a national holiday because it's one of those big days in baseball. Even if your team's in the race, it's a big day because you get a chance to see the players that you may not normally get to see because there wasn't a place for them in the 25. Now, of course, if you're a Royals fan, you're not too happy today. It's not a happy 40-man day because there won't be a Will Myers because he's not on the 40-man. There won't be Odorizzi because the Royals are committed to the idea of if they win in the minors, they'll win in the majors. And so they're leaving all these guys down in Omaha to compete in the playoffs, as you had mentioned. Now, the reason I bring up Jeffers is because – or Jeffries, or however you say his name. I always screw it up.
Jeffress. Exactly as it's
hard, spelled. Hard-throwing Jeremy. He's another guy that has control issues, and they send him down to AA because it allows them to bring him back up 2 days early. At first, you know, we kind of laughed about it, and I thought, well, I guess 2 days early is good, but – and it's clever, but more importantly, that it allows them to bring him back 2 days early in that the season will be over for the AA team. They can bring him right up with the 40-man. So it actually made a lot of sense. It's good to see any time that this front office does things that make sense. So that was a move that makes sense. Is there anybody that either of you would expect to either see moved from AA to AAA to help with that playoff push, or anybody move from AA to AAA to allow somebody to actually be brought up to the majors, or anybody that'll go straight from AA to the majors potentially?
Well, the Marks and Marriott promotions, Michael Marriott, the other guy who got promoted, I think those are kind of the guys that they want to have as extra arms. Maybe that's just to finish off the season. But the Royals did call up Manny Pena and David Lowe today, so they're both in uniform in Kansas City. Hopefully they'll get into one of the two games today, as there's a doubleheader.
Boy, that is quite. That's quite the Kansas City baseball vault bump. David Lowe had he ever been to the major leagues before?
This is he's spent the last three seasons in Omaha, so it's really nice to see him come up because he's hit at every level. He's been a good defensive player, a good speed player, and a little bit of pop. I mean, he had 40 extra base hits this season for Omaha, so it's nice to see him get an opportunity. He's kind of blocked within the Royals organization because Alex Gordon's not going anywhere. Lorenzo Cain isn't going anywhere. Or probably not. They're probably not going to replace him for David Lowe, at least. And then you've got the Frank Cora and Will Myers stuff going on. So if he's going to play long-term, it's probably going to be for another organization. But he gets to play for Kansas City at some point this month. So that's all right. As far as other guys from Omaha, I don't know that we'll see a lot. It depends a lot on how long they end up going deep into the playoffs. You could see, you know, Ryan Verdugo or Tommy Hotovy come back up. You know, you could see anybody who's on the 40-man roster could make another appearance. I just don't know that they're going to do a whole lot with that.
But you don't foresee anybody really getting moved out of. I was going to say, you don't really see anybody getting moved out of the AA roster, which is kind of where I was going, since their season's done. They're one of the few leagues that are actually done right now. So it does give a little bit of opportunity for some of those guys maybe to make an end of the season look at AAA, or, you know, make room to move some guys from AAA to the pros. One final note on David Lowe, and then we'll get back to around the horn, is I did receive some DMs from people after he had been on, and apparently some people that know him quite well, and he really enjoyed the interview, and I joked that, well, he'll be too big to come up when he makes it to Kansas City, and this person joked back that he wouldn't be. So maybe I'll put a call out, since we can't really have anybody on live anymore with our current setup. Maybe I'll make some phone calls this week and see if I can get some recorded interviews with folks, and maybe put out a vault supplemental or hold them for next week, and we'll play them. I'll figure out a way to play them as part of the show or something. Moving on to Wilmington, they won their second half division title, and they're headed to the playoffs. Mike, what do you got on that?
Well, I mean, Brooks Pounders has been a big part of that playoff run so far. He's been pitching really well. well. He's had a couple of outings where he's gone seven innings, struck out a bunch, didn't walk a lot. So he's really kind of rounding into form. Probably see him in Double A next year. They named Ventura, Yordano Ventura, as their pitcher of the year down there. He spent most of the year down there. And Whit Merrifield was their player of the year, who was famous for being the guy who hit the walk-off single a couple of years ago for South Carolina in the College World Series. So, you know, some talent down there, and Wilmington had a pretty decent season. It's interesting to see who's going to make the bump up to Double A. I think Jason Adams is going to do that. I'm not sure how much he's going to pitch the rest of the way because he's already at 154 innings, but, you know, he might get one more start through the playoffs, and then we'll kind of see what happens from there. I want to go back real quick to your question of the Double A to the majors thing. The only guy on the 40-man roster that is in Double A is Noel Arguez. So,
oh, he would be awful.
I don't think we're going to see him at the big league level, not this year at least. So they're probably not going to do any kind of moves. If they're not going to make a move for Will Myers to get on the 40-man roster, they're not going to do that for, you know, Paolo Orlando. So I think we're probably stuck with about what we're going to see. Jeffress will come up. Nate Adcock might come up later. That's about it. I mean, there's not a lot of guys for that. But, yeah, Wilmington, they're in the playoffs. Kane County is going to finish up their season. You know, they're not really in the playoffs or anything for that. Idaho Falls is playing until September 6th. That's significant because tonight I believe John Lamb is going to pitch there after four outings at Arizona. So he's making his comeback. He's shown pretty good control. There are different reports about how hard he's throwing. Some have said he's about 91, 92. I think Keith Law said he was about 87, 88. So we'll see how his arm's holding up for that. But he might get a shot tonight and then on the 6th, on the last day of the year down there. And then after that, I think he's going to pitch in the instructional leagues and try to get some arm strength and everything back after Tommy John surgery. The Burlington Royals in the Appalachian League, they are in their championship series. They're known as the B-Town Bomb Squad. They led the Appalachian League in home runs. Fred Ford had a bunch. Bubba Starling, of course, had a lot. And other players. So, you know, they're doing pretty well down there. Bubba actually hit a home run in game two of the first round of their playoffs. And then Daniel Hernandez had a six-inning, seven-strikeout game to move them along. You know, Bubba was the player of the year at Burlington. So he's been playing really well. You know, a lot of stolen bases, a lot of extra base hits, a lot of walks, a lot of strikeouts. But, you know, it's his first pro season, and I would have to call it a success. The other big first-round pick of the last 2 years, Kyle Zimmer, he had a really good season, all things considered. He did have some minor surgery in his elbow to clean up some bone chips. Should be out about 6 to 8 weeks. Nobody really seems to be concerned that this is going to be a long-term thing. It's not a ligament. It's not any kind of a tear. It's just cleaning things out, and it's things that everybody knew about before the draft. It's not supposed to pose any kind of a long-term threat. So hopefully he just comes back and after a few weeks off, you know, has arm strength back and does a little bit of pitching in the instructional leagues and can start next year at High A Wilmington.
Well, you know, and I wanted to touch on one thing from the Double A Club. I am going to reach out to them because we have had several of them on the show, Birch mm-hmm. Pounders, which, you know, God love him. We've made enough jokes about his name. Birch Pounders, Jason Adam, who is probably the biggest friend of the program, and I still contend to this day my favorite guest because of how much he's done for us. Lane has always said he'd come on, and we've just never had him. I'm going to reach out to all three of them this week and try to do some phone interviews, as well as, and I forget his name, and I feel awful. Maybe one of you two can help me with this. Who is the PA guy for Wilmington that we actually had on the show at one point?
It's John Sadak.
Sadak. He is also he does, and I don't know if you guys know this, and I don't have the website handy, but if you Google John Sadak, you'll find it. He actually does, like, his post-game interviews. He posts them up to the web. And he has told me that we can use any of that that we ever want for the show. I'm going to take him up on it on some stuff that he did with Brooks Pounders and put together a Wilmington supplemental this week, hopefully. I've got a couple of different things going on, but there's no park volleyball, so I have a little more time this week to get that done. So I'm going to try to do that, and then that would be kind of a neat little minor league show focusing on the single-A playoffs. You know, not that because we're Royals fans we have to focus on that little minors, but because, frankly, they're good guys and they're fun to have on and they do good interviews, so it makes for a good podcast. And you should be interested in these guys because both, I think, Jason and Brooks have a really good chance to make the major leagues. Do you guys disagree with me on that?
Jason Adams, sure. Brooks Pounders, he'll have to get everything together. But, I mean, you could definitely see him as a reliever in some right. spots.
I
think he can make it.
I think with Jason Adam, I think you're looking at a guy who can be a starter at the major league level, and you'll most likely get something out of him. Kind of similar to what we were talking about with Yordano Ventura, but of course a wildly different skill set. Pounders, I don't know that he'll be able to stick as a starter. I think most people were expecting him as a reliever in the future as at the pro level, which, would still be fine. I mean, the Royals kind of seem to – there's one thing this farm system can churn out, at least in terms of pitching, it's relievers for whatever reason. They can't churn out starters, yeah. But they seem to have their fair share of good relievers. So there's that. But back to kind of what you were saying about covering the minor leagues, you know, I think not only is it important for what you were saying, you know, these guys are good guys and it's fun to have them on the show and everything, but also, you know, I think it's important for fans to have this knowledge and kind of know about these guys because, not all of them are going to reach the major leagues, but some of them will, and it's always easier and more fun to root for somebody who, you know, Jason Adam, I mean, if we're doing this show 3 years from now and he's up and he's starting for the Royals, you know, I mean, that's somebody who hopefully he will be on the show every step of the way at some point, and people will be able to say, you know, I kind of heard him every step of the way and his evolution from a Kansas high school baseball player to, you know, Royal starter one day. So I mean, I personally think that's cool. And I think that's fun. So I think that's that's kind of why I think we all spend so much time with the minors and talking to a lot of these minor league guys, because not only do the Royals have a good system, but it'll be fun for these guys to get up to the majors and people that we have developed a relationship with and can develop a relationship with the fans.
Well, and you know, kind of playing on that, you know, yes, this is a podcast and it's been something important to us. And, you know, I do hope that some way, shape or form, even if it is just on Google Talk, you know, that we're doing this show in 3 years, hopefully by then, you know, one of us actually owns a house where we can put our own man cave and hopefully I'm that person and we'll be doing something different with it or we'll be on the radio. You know, I'm always looking trying to find that station that's not doing so good in the ratings that might want to throw us a bone. But, you know, and I urge people, I'm not kidding. If you really want us back on the radio, call radio stations, even non-sports stations, and say, hey, I don't listen to you, but yeah, you need these guys, and they're good, they're funny, they're worth having. So, but back to what we were saying, yeah, if Jason makes it, honest to God, guys, I could really see a day when all of us are sitting at Oklahoma Joe's with Jason Adam, Major League Baseball player, having dinner, because he really, I don't think, will ever forget where he's come from. Plus, he's from this area, so he would spend his year here. Like, he's not going to leave in the off season. He might go to Arizona to do some training or whatever, but he's going to, once he makes it to Kansas City, he's going to live in Kansas City. And as long as the Royals want him and pay him fairly, you know, he will be a member of this organization. They're not going to have to overpay to keep Jason Adams. So that's why I think it'll be so special if he actually does make it all the way up.
And from a player standpoint, in terms of our show, he might be the only, but if he's not the only, he's definitely the biggest player supporter of our show. So
absolutely,
you know, that's definitely always nice to have that.
You know, Brooks Pounders has been pretty good to us too. Kind of an off note as we move on here, did you? I guess the last note on here, and I'll bring this one up because I did want to talk about this for a second too, is Kyle Zimmer watched minor surgery to clean up chips in the elbow, out 6 to 8 weeks.
Yep.
Not an issue, and this was known by scouts. Not only was this known by scouts, it was known by everybody when they drafted him, and we kind of, a bunch of us, all three of us, plus Clint Scholes and D.B. Lesky of the Pine Tar Press podcast, we all talked about how you must really like a guy when you know he has a hamstring issue and at least one, if not two, elbow issues before you ever draft him. You have to really like a guy. But, you know, they were able to sign him quick, so maybe they knew because he had these injuries that he'd be more willing to sign. But, you know, it, they must really like him, and he's shown good stuff. So, you know, what do we think of Kyle Zimmer with all that's going on?
Well, I think he also signed for $500,000. Nice. If you're only listening, Troy just pulled his cat into the picture. Anyway, Zimmer, yeah, he signed for $500,000 less than the slot amount, which I think was probably part of that. They knew that, you know, there was, anytime you're talking about injuries, okay, or things like that, yeah, there's some risk. I think it's minimal for both of the injuries that he had, so they weren't worried to pass him up or anything, but I think they did get a little bit of a deal on it because of that. You know, if you look at him pitch, I mean, I think it's interesting, and I've talked with Kevin Scobie about this stuff a lot, about pitchers and the way that they throw, and he throws a lot more like an infielder than a pitcher in a lot of ways. And, you know, he was a converted third baseman, and so, you know, you get that where I think that's what the Royals really kind of see is that, okay, he's somebody who has this really good stuff, has a really good arm. He's 20 years old, doesn't have a lot of innings on it. So I think all things considered with his stuff, his potential, his track record, I think it was a worthy risk for them to take. And there's a lot to work with there. So I think he's going to be fine. He's really exciting to kind of follow.
And I am really excited to see what he does as a player. This is where we're going to take our first break. We've actually been going for about 50 minutes. We need to take a break for those of you that are listening to the podcast. But those of you that are, if anybody's actually listening live, we don't have our chat room set up right now. There is a place to post comments on YouTube. So in a way, it's a chat room. But maybe down the way, I'll work the chat room back in. But for now, use Twitter as a chat room, you know, hashtag Kansas City Baseball Vault. It's the best chat room there is, and really that's where it should be anyway. So for those of you, Dave Darby, who missed the chat room, utilize the chat room we already have, and it's a good place for it anyways. I know the chat room was pretty special to a few of our longtime listeners, but I'm not so sure that we're going to have it back anytime soon. Also, those of you listening on the podcast, normally, if you wanted to go see the video, you'd go to the Royal Man Report. Currently, these are going to be this one and the one we did a few months ago the same way are recording to my personal YouTube, which is youtube.com/TroyAOF. Feel free to go there to watch this episode. I'll try to start setting this up with, I actually do have a Royal Man Report account set up on Google Plus, so I can do Hangouts from there, so I'll have to start utilizing that a little more. Let's see. Yeah, I know, right? All that behind the scenes talk. But we're going to take a break right here. So for those of you in the podcast, we're actually taking a break, and then we'll be back in about a minute, minute and a half. For those of you listening live, stay right here because we're not actually taking a break on the live show. We'll be right back.
The Kansas City Baseball Vault will be right back after these messages.
Brand new Royal Stadium in Kansas City's Harry S. Truman Sports Complex is the attractive setting for this year's game. Hosting this all-star occasion are Mr. and Mrs. Ewing Kauffman. And with a stadium record crowd of almost 41,000 streaming in, everything certainly is up to date in Kansas City.
The Vault.
Kelly's Westport. It's the place where you buy beer. This guy came into the bar the other day and was telling me that they had friends in town and went down to that fancy bar district downtown. They went to one of those swanky no-ball cap bars and ordered a beer. Now, this wasn't one of those imported beers. It wasn't even one of those microbrew deals. This bartender rang up the tab, and he wanted $27 for three dadgum beers. $27 for some beers. That isn't right. That isn't fair. so he took them down to see us. We got them some nice big beers for half that price. Even had one of the ladies find a fella there. Got him some pizza. Listen, don't fall victim to those overpriced, no ball cap bars down there. You might as well take your money and throw it in the trash. Kelly's Westport, it's the place where you buy beer. Kelly's Westport Inn, tell them the Royal Man Report sent you.
And welcome back into the Kansas City Baseball Vault. Boy, it's kind of hard. I'm so used to saying welcome back into the Royal Man Report, but we'll have to get used to it. It was funny when Chris signed off on 1510 by saying, this is the Royal Man Report, same kind of thing. We were going to have Drew Davidson come on to talk about the Fort Worth area. He's a Kansas City native. He was unable to figure things out with the Google Talk. Again, we're going to always be working to figure out ways to
working
make this
out bugs.
It's going to take some time again. It's going to be we're really taking, you know, a technological step back right now. but there is a lot that you can do with Google Hangouts. I just need to take the time to play with it and see what there is, and we'll figure out what happened with Drew, and I'll reach out to him this week and we'll get him in.
I talked to him, I think, and yeah, he writes for the Fort Worth Star Telegram. He's a beat reporter for the Texas Rangers. We're going to have him on, kind of do a little preview for this upcoming, starts on Labor Day, I believe, upcoming series with the Texas Rangers. But yeah, I think I talked to him, and I think we'll have him back on around playoff time maybe, because the Royals will probably be packing up to go home, or will be, but... Yeah. The Rangers definitely will still have their season going, so we can kind of do a little playoff preview with them. I think that'll be a good little show, since there probably won't be too much interesting Royals stuff to talk about come October.
Yeah, that's always the unfortunate part, that we'll be talking about, you know, whatever else. But, you know, we are going to, and this may be where it gets difficult this offseason, is we are going to still work to have some of the great guests that we had in the offseason last year. I'm going to have to figure out what I would need to do to maybe work Skype into this as well. And there may be a Skype add-on. I may have to just look around in this and find out. But we are going to work to have guests on. And I'm going to take this opportunity to jump down. I don't think this is necessarily the order we had it in, but let's go ahead and jump down. I want to talk about something that I'm pretty happy about, because he has been probably one of the biggest supporters of our show as far as a national level, and really all the guys at Baseball Prospectus. We can't thank enough Jason Parks, who's been on the show, Joe Hamrahi, who hasn't been on the show. We just never got our schedules coordinated, but he's been a great friend of the program and allowed us to actually sit on a panel at one of their major events. And I mean, I don't know about you guys, but that still ranks up there in probably the top 5, top 10 things that we've gotten to do because of this podcast. I mean, Blog to the K, that, those kind of go hand in hand for me, even though they were entirely different experiences. I want to thank everybody from Baseball Prospectus for all they've done, but especially Mr. Kevin Goldstein. And I know Kevin's not a listener, but I know that we have listeners that also listen to Up and In, used to listen to Up and In, because I think they're going to have one more episode. And Kevin Goldstein has accepted a job as the pro scouting coordinator for the Houston Astros. And I did see a couple of Astros fans that are like, oh, this is a joke. What are they doing? This guy, he's wishy-washy. I don't think what they realize is he's the only reason you think he's wishy-washy is because he's the only scout that you actually get to see every opinion he has. Scouts are very quiet people. Like, if you're an Up and In fan, you know, he was never able to give out names of scouts he knew.
Yeah, they don't put their name on a lot most of the time. They're quiet about that. They'll share their opinions, they'll leak them, but you're not going to see a name attached to them most of the time unless it's, the Royals signed this guy, and then you talk to the scout that signed him. But you know, they're not going to talk about other teams' players and put their name on it.
In all honesty, James Lamb has actually been really tentative. One of the reasons I've never pushed the issue and haven't really gotten him on the show, father of John Lamb, if you don't know, he's active on Twitter, one of the best baseball Twitter followers there is, Royals and otherwise. But he's been a little tentative about coming on, I think, because he is a scout for the Marlins, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think he's kind of afraid of saying possibly anything that could get him in trouble. And so it's a hard life being a scout when it comes to dealing with the public. But Kevin's going to be the the scouting coordinator for the professional level, which for those of you that don't know, there's scouts for every level from single A to the pros, and then usually typically at triple A and the pro level for teams that have invested a lot of money into scouting, and I actually think the Royals may be one of these teams, there's typically scouts that'll either scout regions or even individual teams because they're always looking at players at the triple A and major league level for the sake of trades and what have you. Mike, you seem to be better connected on this kind of stuff. Am I right on that?
Well, the first thing, they're all pro because it's all minor leagues. They're all professionals. That's true. But I don't know what his exact position is going to be. The way they term it, the way the it's labeled, seems like he's going to be the guy who oversees a lot of it.
That's what I took away, too.
Yeah, but you're right. There are guys who cover certain regions. You know, the Royals, for instance, they have, you know, Rene Francisco is very good at Latin American scouting. He's down there in the Dominican. He's down there in Panama and all those areas scouting for that area. And then there are other guys that scout the West Coast. They scout down in the Southeast. They scout, you know, up in the upper north and things like that. So, you know, they do have a lot of guys who are, you know, they kind of get their information and they filter it up to the next guy, and then that guy gets it into the scouting directors, and eventually it gets to J.J. Piccolo, it gets to Dayton Moore, you know, guys like Scott Sharp or other big names out there, Art Stewart, you know, Hall of Fame scout, guys like that. So it's, you know, it's just typical hierarchy where you have guys who report. They'll do advanced scouting for upcoming series. They'll do scouting for, you know, players that they want to trade for. They'll do draft scouting. So they'll have guys who go into, you know, high school games, college games, and they'll take a look at, you know, what guys they want to draft and get an idea and kind of get, you know, some notes on them so that they're not flying blind and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, and that's what Kevin Goldstein has done for the last, what, 6-7 years. You know, he's really worked hard to come up with all those connections. And, you know, it's been almost a single focus. You know, if we've talked to him, and he doesn't like any other sport except, well, baseball and sumo wrestling, of all things. So, you know, it's been a singular focus on baseball. So he's just zoned in on baseball and made it his absolute specialty. And, you know, I think everybody who kind of follows that community is really happy for him because that's awesome. The guy just started doing this as a hobby, started getting paid for it, and now he's doing the dream now.
It's well, weird because I just yesterday I read a long time ago, not a long time ago, like a month ago, maybe a couple months ago, Goldstein tweeted a link to an article about an interview that he did in which he actually explained how he got into writing and talking about baseball and scouting and all that kind of stuff. And I favorited that tweet, and I just hadn't got around to reading it. And literally just yesterday, I finally had the time to pull it up and read that article and hear about how he got into writing for Baseball Prospectus. And then about an hour later, I find out that he's working for the Houston Astros. So kind of crazy that, you know, especially hearing how he got started and now he's in the front office. But, yeah, I mean, he had before blogs were even a thing, and it was just, you just had email over the internet, he had this email subscriber list where he would just write all his prospect thoughts in an email and then send it out. And he had thousands of subscribers. He had general managers of teams that were subscribing to his email list. And the guy was working as a consultant. I mean, that story to me is just incredibly insane. I mean, that's exactly right, Mike, just what you said. That's the dream right there. I mean, the dude just says he's doing his 9-to-5 job or whatever, probably more as a consultant for a company he was working for, but just doing that, you know, standard kind of job like the rest of us and has this hobby. And the next thing you know, I mean, here he is living his dream. I mean, that's, I don't know, that's, I mean, if my career path went the way that his did, I wouldn't complain one single second. I mean, I think that'd be awesome. I mean, good for him. Absolutely. Congratulations to Kevin. I mean, that's awesome. We all met him when he came for Baseball Prospectus at the All-Star break. And that was, I mean, it was awesome meeting him and kind of hearing just, you know, not only just about baseball, but just everything. You know, great guy, totally deserves it. So it's awesome news, and I heard that for sure.
And he's been very good to us. I mean, going back to before we'd ever had him on the show, when he just liked what Mike had done with exposing the experts on Twitter. And
that was awesome.
And mentioned it on Up and In, you know, making the hits for Kings of Kaufman go through the roof for a day, to where, you know, he's talked about our show being hilarious and other things that him and Jason Parks have both said. And you know, we can't forget Jason in all this. Obviously, this isn't about Jason because it's Kevin's big move, but both those guys have been huge for this show. And I remember when I walked into the bar at Kelly's, they had decided to go to Kelly's, of course, our sponsor, Kelly's Westport Inn. And apparently there were some GMs there that we didn't know about because, you know, Kevin didn't broadcast that. But Kevin brought the party to Kelly's the night before the big BP event. And I remember I walked in and I got about six steps in and I saw, you know, the signature hat. And and I kind of stopped for a second. I just took a breath. And Kevin's so funny because he's like, I don't understand why people are so excited to meet me. And he doesn't understand. He describes himself now. He's already changed his bio on Twitter. It says pro scouting coordinator for the Houston Astros and D-minus list celebrity, internet celebrity. He doesn't give himself enough credit. Never has, never will. Maybe he does, but he doesn't put it out publicly, whatever. But that's – he knows where he's at. He once told me in a private message, he said I had thanked him on Facebook for some stuff he had done for us before we'd really gotten to know him. And I said, hey, thank you for always helping out us folks that don't have the connections. I said, it's really awesome that you've stayed humble in the community. And he says, look, I'm as arrogant as anybody could possibly be, or I'm as arrogant. I've got an ego the size of a planet. That's what he said. I got an ego the size of a planet, but I know where I came from and I know who's helped get me here, or something along those lines. And that really hit home for me. And so when I had an opportunity to meet him, I calmed myself down. You know, I took a breath. I said, Kevin Goldstein's right there. I took a breath and I walked up and I said, Kevin? And he says, yes. And I said, Troy Olsen, Royal Manor Port. And then he proceeded to introduce me to Jason and to everybody else, and Joe Hamrahi, who I'd never seen, you know, but I'd exchanged emails with on what we were doing and everything. And it was very nice to be, for him to be humble enough to come out to the bar and to really take in everybody that came. And those guys really enjoy, you know, people that enjoy the podcast, and I could not there. I know there's people out there like our good friend Lance, Northmo Royals or Northmo Royal. I always forget if it has an S or not on Twitter. You know, he doesn't like Goldstein. He thinks he's very arrogant, which Goldstein will tell you he is, you know, and he's not everybody's cup of tea, and he makes a lot of people mad, but the guy works hard, and he's had a great opportunity, and he's honestly a very good human being. You know, the dog that's in his pictures is a dog that he found abandoned on the streets of Chicago, and he took him in, and it's a beautiful dog. I can't believe somebody just abandoned it, but, you know, he took that dog in and essentially saved its life, and, you know, he's a good human being, and, you know, I may clip this out and send it to him so he knows how, you know, that we did this, because he won't just listen to the show, nor should he. But,
thoughts for you
by the Royal Manor Port guys. But, you know, they've done several things that we've clipped out in the original opens before, obviously, before we came to KC Baseball Vault, you'd hear things from them. Moving from Kevin to another person that's actually in one of our one-liners, Kent Babb got a job in Washington, D.C., with the Washington Post, and we want to say congratulations to Babb as well. He was kind enough again to come and do an all football episode of the Royal Manor Report with Jeff and Chris. And Jeff, you know, you obviously dealt with Ken a lot more than I did, but he's always been a lot of fun on Twitter, and I'm going to be sad to see him go. But what was your thoughts of meeting Kent Babb when you had him on?
I mean, I thought Kent was great. You know, sometimes you see, well, for me, one of the weirdest things about, not necessarily the weirdest, but one of the coolest things, I guess, about this whole experience of us in this podcast has been, and, you know, I guess this show is kind of weirdly turning into this kind of memory-filled show or whatever, but, you know, we had both Kent Babb on for an entire show, and we had Sam Ellinger on for an entire show, and, you know, we met Kevin Goldstein and Jason Parks and those guys, and you think, you know, oh, they're these huge, you know, sports writers, some of them national, some of them local, but whatever, you know, these big name guys that they're, their names to us. And to Kevin Goldstein's point on the other side, you know, they're big deals to us, but they are still, you know, just normal, you know, fun-loving guys that, you know, having them on the show and being able to develop personal relationships with them and kind of joke with them on Twitter and things like that is definitely been one of the highlights for me. And Ken Babb was one of those guys where my first time I ever really talked to him about anything was just responding to a tweet that he had about some article he wanted to write. And I had some information that could help him. And that kind of snowballed into him coming on the show after that Arrowhead Anxiety article that he wrote in December. And that was just a great experience. I mean, I thought that was a big get for us, really. And one of the, you know, last offseason, we just kind of kept hitting home runs, if you will, with a lot of the guests we were able to get and the timing of when we were able to get them and everything. And him coming on the show, I think, was one of those things with him and Mellinger and everybody else to just really kind of push us into. I mean, there were a few months where we had all those guys on, Goldstein, Parks, Mellinger, Babb, everybody just kind of pushed us up to that next level of, you know, being a podcast that people know about and hear about and respect. And you know, I think similar to how Goldstein helped us out, I think Kim Babb's helped us out a lot. And I appreciate what he's done and him and Mellinger and everything. So, you know, it's sad to see him go because I think he was a good voice for talking about the Chiefs and had a lot of good information, a lot of good contacts out there. And I'm really curious who the star is going to get to replace him, if they're going to look outside or maybe they look to try and bring somebody up and take that kind of columnist Chiefs beat reporter role. I mean, they still have Adam Teicher, but it'll be interesting to see who they bring to fill his role, because he's definitely got some big shoes to fill.
And if you've listened this far, obviously we're off the baseball train. This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault, and we are a baseball podcast at heart. But, you know, we had an emailer once tell us that he doesn't really like our show because we don't always talk about baseball. So pretty much I think it's safe to say that if you're looking for more baseball analysis, you got 50 minutes of it before the first break. You can pretty much stop at this point. Everything we're going to talk about going forward is going to be more of our thoughts on town and whatever, because, you know, it may be the Kansas City Baseball Vault, but this is the stuff that's relevant to one, the show, and to two, our city. And it is our city, and that's one thing I really do feel about Kansas City more than places like New York or places like that, is people that live in Kansas City really do feel like there's some ownership in the city, and we're disgusted at the parts of town that suck, and we take honor in the parts of town that are good, and we take honor in the people that come from Kansas City that are awesome, like the Kent Babs, and another one that we're losing, who we've never dealt with on the show, but I know I've had some interaction with him on Twitter, but not much. But I don't know, and this probably is going to go to Jeff again, but Josh Looney, Jeff, did you ever have a chance to deal with him at all in your Chiefs rumblings?
Not too much with him. I mean, I think maybe just a couple tweet replies and things like that on Twitter, but nothing really beyond that. And he was the guy, and it's a little bit different for him because he wasn't a part of the media necessarily because he worked for the Chiefs and was kind of in their more or less PR marketing department. So the relationship that he can have with fans is a little bit different because I think he has to be typically a little bit more guarded. He's more of a, you know, similar to like a Mitch Holtis or somebody like that. You know, you're not going to be able to speak as freely as like a Kent Babb about Arrowhead Anxiety or situations that, you know, within the Chiefs organization and things like that. But all the same, you know, he was out there working really hard and he put out a lot of good information. He was really, you know, he seemed like he was always there to answer fans' questions and things like that. So, you know, best of luck to him as he leaves Kansas City and moves on to hopefully bigger and better things.
I think he'll be a good addition to the NCAA in Indianapolis. That's where he's headed. And I think he'll be a good addition, another good guy. He was another guy that joked around on Twitter with other people like Babb and Mellinger and those guys. And so, you know, I'm really excited to see what he brings to the NCAA and the direction he goes. So hats off to him as well. From there, I think we're going to take a quick break. And did we have actually any other baseball stuff, Mike, that you can think of?
I covered everything.
Yeah, I think we had a pretty good first segment there, and I think that's going to be most of our baseball. We were kind of watching to see what's happening on Happy 40-Man Day, and I know there's a website called, and I had it, and I don't have it now in front of me, but I want to say MLB depth charts. He was one of the guys that was at the BP event. Haven't ever had him on the show. Should have tried to figure out a way to get him on today, but he's probably too busy anyways. But MLBdepthcharts.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at MLBdepthcharts. He's tracking every move that happens in the major leagues at all levels, and he does this all year. But today's got to be one hell of a day for him, because it's the busiest day of the year in baseball, I'm pretty sure. So if you're wanting to keep up on whatever teams, be it the Royals or otherwise, that are making moves, that's a great website to track. Maybe if I'd been watching a little closer, I could have caught that. So I know Michael Engel needs to get out of here. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come right back. Jeff and I are going to just talk a little bit about preseason Chiefs football. We're going to go and leave it attached to this show. We're not going to separate it out because I don't think we're going to have a lot. So we're gonna do a quick hit on football, and then we'll be out of here. So if you're not a football fan, thanks for listening. We'll catch you next Saturday at noon. And if you're still with us, and if you're a football fan or a Kansas City fan, stay tuned. We'll be right back on the other side.
The Kansas City Baseball Vault will be right back after these messages.
We saw two or three different replays. It was a bang-bang play at first, yet the replays show rather conclusively that the Royals got a tremendous, gigantic break.
The Vault.
Hey, it's Ben for Kelly's Westport Inn. Do high gas prices got you down? Well, don't worry about it. Hop on the bus to Kelly's Westport Inn and save some jingle jangle as you drink until you're blingle blangle. Kelly's has the best open-air roof in town with beer and drink prices that are cheaper than at the pump. That's for sure. There's plenty of TVs to watch the soccer and the football games this summer. Plus, there's someone for everyone, and you can find him or her at Kelly's. Hearts and smoochies. So check out Kelly's Westport Inn, and you'll have more change to fill up your range, Rover. This has been Ben, Kelly's Westport Ben, saying smell you laters.
Welcome back into the Kansas City Baseball Vault, where we're going to actually do a little Kansas City, but not so much baseball. We're going to I'm going to just let Jeff pretty much talk about the Chiefs preseason. You know, tying it all back together, a little synergy here. Kevin Goldstein always says you can't pay too much attention to the preseason baseball and to the minor leagues and what have you. What can we take away from the preseason for the Chiefs? They didn't really show any packages, offensive or defensive. We really didn't find out anything we didn't know. As far as, like, Castle's concerned, I guess Alex Tanny's out on IR. That was interesting to me. Brady Quinn got a concussion. Is there anybody that can play quarterback for the Chiefs other than Matt Castle right now?
I think no. And I think even if Brady Quinn, Alex Tanny, whoever was healthy that the Chiefs have had at any point in this offseason or preseason, I think the answer would still be no. And I'm hesitant to even say Matt Castle can play quarterback. But that's probably being a little harsh. I think he definitely can if the situation is 100% right for him. And honestly, I think that's a appeal he's been trying to do. He's been trying to garner a situation for Matt Castle that is 100% right for him, to where he is set up to succeed. And, I mean, the problem with Matt Castle, and this is going to sound harsh, and maybe it is or whatever, but if he has the opportunity to fail, he's going to find it. I mean, he's shown us that so far. Three seasons that he's been the Chiefs starter. He's had one good one and two below average to bad seasons. And the one good one was very good. And that one was about 100% right in that situation, or at least close to it. So I think that's ultimately what Peele is really trying to do with everything. And I mean, it's been tough this preseason, you know, as far as it, for me, listening to a lot of the sports radio in town this last couple weeks, you know, especially with the Chiefs kind of struggling a little bit in the preseason, it's gotten kind of hard to listen to because there's all these grand statements that people are making. And it's just all of a sudden, you know, a month ago, the Chiefs were a 10-6 team that maybe could even go to 11 wins and go to the playoffs, and we're the best team in the AFC West. And now all of a sudden, you know, people are saying, oh, well, maybe they're only a 7 or 8 win team and they'll barely make the playoffs. And I think this is just reading way too much into the preseason. You know, I mean, I think after that first game, everybody had a little bit of excitement and read a little bit too much into it, myself included. But I do think that, you know, overall, there's not much we can see, not much we can glean about what's going to go on in the regular season until we actually get there. You know, I think that we're not going to see a team that's as bad as that Seattle game, but I also think that we're probably not going to see a team that's maybe as good as those first couple drives in that Arizona game. It's going to be somewhere in between. It's hard to tell where everything's going to shake out when you have a situation in Seattle where they were playing that game focusing a lot on the pass, trying to see where they were in the passing game, how things were going to develop, can they work the passing game to their success. Then you look at the game against the Packers. You know, they dominated that game in just about every major statistical category, time of possession, rushing yards, everything, you know, except for turnovers. And that was only they lost 1-0 in the turnover battle. I'm saying they lost 1-0, but beyond that, you know, they just really kind of stuck with the running game. They wanted to see where are we at in our running game. We kind of know where we're at and everywhere else, and so we haven't really seen them, you know, except for those first couple Arizona drives, we haven't really seen them put together everything and try and be the team that we think they can be. So I'm holding out judgment. I'm not jumping up from where I was, you know, on Echo Sports Report, which we're kind of making this little part, the segment of Echo Sports Report, at least for the time being, until we can kind of figure things out. But I was talking on that show when it was its own show a few weeks ago, the Chiefs, I thought they were 10-6 team, and I haven't wavered from that. I still thought they were after that Arizona game. I still think they are after the Seattle game and after Thursday night's game against Green Bay. You know, I still think this team has a lot of talent. Injuries are a concern right now, especially when you look at the secondary. Brandon Flowers, who knows what's wrong with him? The Chiefs don't even know. So, I mean, that's going to be tough. It's going to be a bit of a rocky start to the season. I don't know. I didn't have them winning the game against Atlanta anyway, but with Tom Ali out for some weird, vague suspension that the Chiefs haven't really given much detail on, nor has Tom Ali, but you know, that's beside the point. But having him gone and then Brandon Flowers gone and then Kendrick Lewis could be gone, it's the secondary is pretty banged up. They don't have their best pass rusher. It does not look good against Atlanta in that first week. You know, I mean, if anybody can do it and get the players that he has on defense and scheme around some absences like that, at least for one game, not for a whole season, and nobody can do that, but for at least one game, you know, I think someone like Romeo Crennel can definitely do that. I don't know if he'll be able to make it happen, though. And this you know, this Atlanta Falcons team, they're a good team. I had them on my power rankings on echonetwork.com, and I had them as the number 7 team in the league, so they're up there. And I had the Chiefs ranked as 15, so I don't predict them, the Chiefs, to win this game anyway, but it could be worse than even I was thinking based on some of the injuries. It'll be interesting to see how things start out with the season, but I know I'm definitely excited for football to be here.
One of the few things that I do know about football, I shouldn't say that. Everybody always says, you know, if I say something on Twitter during football season, you know, oh, go back to baseball. I actually do know quite a bit about football. I don't know as much as I do about baseball, but one thing that I did look up and research on was the reason that you haven't heard anything from the Chiefs or Tomba on the suspension is because the Fuhrer, Goodell, does not allow for any of that information to be given out. So what the Fuhrer wants, the Fuhrer gets, and you won't hear anything about that suspension as far as that's concerned. I'm not reading too much into this crappy preseason. The problem with us as Kansas City fans is we're so hard up for a winner that we see anything, we jump right on it, you know, and we're so excited. And, you know, I'm real excited because you and I are in a fantasy dynasty league together, and we have a guy in there that's from Iowa, and he's always trying to he'd like to get Dwayne Bowe for me, who I do have on my team, who I'm not a very big fan of, outside of him being a Chief, but I didn't like how he handled the offseason and whatever, and people have placed blame on both sides, and that I'm not going to get into that. It's irrelevant at this point. I reject his trades, and he's like, and he's been after Hillis too, and he's like, oh yeah, you're a Kansas City guy. And I said, you know, it has nothing to do with that. For one, I know what Dwayne Bowe's value is, and even because I'm down on him, I'm not just going to give him away, but and I think he's going to have an okay season. I'm really interested to see what he does, because either he's going to have a huge year because he's got the ability to do so and he's playing for big money, or he's just going to lay an egg because he doesn't want to be in Kansas City. So it'll be interesting to see which route Bo takes. But the moral of my story is the two-headed running back monster of Jamaal Charles and Peyton Hillis. I had gotten Hillis last year when he was still a Brown. I'd gotten him cheap because he was so down. And then when he got traded here, I knew what Thomas Jones did with a healthy Jamaal Charles. I truly believe that Hillis could be the most underrated running back in fantasy football and in football in general, because Charles is going to have his 10 to 15 carries, get his, you know, whatever yardage. But Hillis is going to come in, and he's going to make some yards too, and he's going to be in a situation where he could have a big year like he did in Cleveland. What's your opinion on the two-headed monster that is the Kansas City running back situation?
I like it. I mean, I think coming into the offseason, if there was one thing you knew the Chiefs had to have, they had to have, especially coming from those 3A, they call them the ACL trio right now, which I'm not a fan of that nickname, but, you know, of those players, they had to have Jamaal Charles come back. They had to have him be the guy he was in 2010, and the Chiefs had to have a successful running game. And Thomas Jones, you know, I think he retired. I'm not even certain, to be honest with you, but not on the Chiefs anymore. And Peyton Hillis, I thought, was a great pickup at the time, especially for a one-year contract. You know, let him prove himself, see what he can do, maybe sign him back if it really works out. But I think coming out of the preseason, especially offensively, you know, that's got to be one of the things that the Chiefs have to be most excited about. And I'm not talking about the success in particular of the running game. I mean, they actually had a lot of success, but just the things that you saw between Peyton Hillis looking like the guy in Cleveland when he had those 1,200 yards, when he was hitting holes, he was busting some long runs, he looked like a load to bring down. And then you saw Jamaal Charles, who after the first game against Arizona, I was unimpressed, not because of his stats, but because of I'm not going to say unimpressed, that's a bad word. Bad word choice on my part, but I was still a little tentative to say that he was all the way back. And I think throughout the preseason, you saw him get more comfortable on the field, and you saw him be a little bit more comfortable in his knee and how things were going, and his ability to cut and do things like that. And that's one of those situations where preseason is actually really valuable for someone like him, because you can rehab, you can practice as much as you want, but to be able to have faith that you can make that game, that in-game cut, and that you can take a hit to the knee and that you're going to be fine, to have that ability, to have that knowledge and confidence in your knee, that's something you can only get from being in a game, and it's best to kind of feel it out in the preseason, get a few carries, and get that in, get comfortable before the regular season. So that's one point where the preseason has actually been valuable for the Chiefs, and I think I feel extremely comfortable with that two-headed monster, and it's one of those really positive things. I'm looking forward to see what they can do. This running back core is pretty good. I mean, they've got, I believe Cyrus Gray made the team, and Sean Drone, I can't remember if it's an S on there or not, but made the team well, and I think they've got a good running back core there, and it's the running game is going to be a lot better than it was last year.
I think one of those guys I don't think made the team, because they had somebody that had an odd name, and I'll try to pull that up while we're still talking here. But I did want to mention, we didn't mention Stanzi at all in the quarterback conversation, because really he's as irrelevant as the guys that I'm about to talk about here in just a second. But he's going to be the third quarterback, I guess, unless this concussion's a bigger deal, then yes, he'll be the second quarterback. But if Stanzi is the only hope for the Chiefs, they're in bigger trouble than we could imagine. Really quick, before I look up that running back thing, I did want to say 610 just posted on their Twitter and Facebook that the Chiefs have signed a few guys to their practice squad. Most of these guys were cut in the last day or two by the Chiefs to get down to 53. Josh Bellamy, wide receiver out of Louisville. Patrick DeMarco, fullback out of South Carolina. Junior Hemingway, wide receiver out of Michigan, I think. Jerome Long out of San Diego State, David Mims out of Virginia Union, Jamar Newsom, wide receiver out of Central Florida, Lucas Patterson, offensive line out of Texas A&M, and Nico Thorpe, defensive back out of Auburn. These guys, really, the only shot they'll have is if injuries get real rough, then they might get a shot as a backup or something like that in the NFL, but they're always guys. They're like the, I guess the practice squad is the closest thing that football currently has to a minor league system, and they're guys that the Chiefs could pull to if they need to. But again, they're pretty irrelevant to the whole scope of things. But I saw that come across, so I thought I would mention that as well. Now,
there's, yeah, the practice squad people, doubt we'll see much from them. I mean, it's good to kind of watch out because there is a little bit of development in the NFL. It's not nearly what it is in MLB and some other leagues, you know, but there are some players that teams really do want to hang on to and kind of develop. And you look at Tyler Thigpen as one who, he was a guy that was on the Minnesota Vikings practice squad, and the Chiefs pulled him off, and the Vikings were kind of upset about it. I mean, not upset at the Chiefs necessarily, but upset that they lost the guy because they thought he did have a future, not as a starter, you know, but and he does. I mean, he's turned into a quality backup guy. He's not going to go out and he's going to start for an entire season and lead you to the playoffs. But if you're in a pinch, you need somebody to come in for a quarter, maybe a game or two. You know, he showed, especially with the Chiefs in 2008, he can come in and do that. So, I mean, there is a little bit of developmental aspect to the practice squad. But for the most part, those are names that you're probably not going to hear the rest of the year.
We're not sure the direction that the Echo Sports Report is going to take at this point. Obviously, the plan for it was to have Chris Kamler and Jeff do this show, whatever means they had. Obviously, due to time restraints, we may have to keep it on Saturdays, which will turn it into kind of a preview show and a look-back show 6 days after the fact. As far as the Chiefs are concerned, we will talk a little bit of college sports on here as well, I suppose. I really haven't been involved with this show a lot, so this will be I'll have to kind of get my feet wet to go with Jeff on doing the show. But it is something that I would like to see us continue. So, again, everything's kind of up in the air due to Chris dealing with some personal stuff. If you didn't, we mentioned that earlier on this show. If you didn't listen to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, then Chris has left the show for a little while. It's of his own choosing, and he's welcome back at any point. But until that decision's made, he's still part of our planning, and he's still involved with Echo Network as a whole and with all these shows. So until then, I will be helping Jeff do this show as well as I can. Today is college football kickoff. I'm excited. I make no bones about it. Nebraska's my college football team. I'm excited to see them. I'll probably be at the Royals game during the game, but maybe if it's still crappy, I'll walk out to Rivals and see if I can find it on a TV and overpay for a beer and watch football. It'll be just like I'm at the stadium overpaying for the beer. So, you know, the rest of the teams all kick off today too, MU, KU, and K-State. KU, you know, big hopes for you, for the KU guys. Jeff's a KU fan. They're hoping to get a whopping 4 wins. KSU, it's going to be interesting to see what K-State brings to the table this year. They're a team that I believe Kent Babb was the one that said he picked them 6th. No, I'm sorry, Curtis Kitchen picked them, I think, 6th in the Big 12. And Kitchen, a friend of the show, he said that they're the 6th best team in the Big 12, and that really tells you how good the Big 12 is this year. I've heard a lot of people reference the Big 12 as the 11 plus Kansas. Not a lot of hope there for the Jayhawks this year. So maybe they'll surprise some people and rattle off 5 or 6 wins. You know, some people were on Kitchen for saying, oh, the team's going to make a step back, is what you're saying, because they're only going to finish 6th. No, not really, because the conference is going to be so good this year. It's really going to be the SEC and the Big 12 and everybody else. And that's coming from a Big 10 fan. The Big Ten's a mess right now. I mean, if you haven't heard all the crap that's gone on in the Big Ten, you've been living under a rock, for that matter, with Penn State and Ohio State on probation, and really Wisconsin and Nebraska are the only two teams, maybe Michigan and Michigan State, I suppose. Michigan's a pretty good team. I shouldn't overlook them.
Michigan State beat Boise last night, so, I mean, they're a top 15 team.
Boise had half their team suspended, though. So I don't know how excited I get about that team, about that game for Michigan State. But, yeah, I really do think it's going to come down to Wisconsin, Michigan State, and Nebraska. And Wisconsin's got a free ride to the to the championship game for the Big Ten, because there's nobody on that side that can really play in the postseason, let alone be good enough to do so. So it'll be interesting to see who comes out of the other side, and I refuse to mention those conference names because they are the most ridiculous conference names of all time. But it'll be interesting to see what comes out of Nebraska's side and who that Big Ten championship spot. But getting to the team that I think has the most questions and will be interesting to watch even if you hate them, is the Missouri Tigers, because Missouri is going to be very interesting this year. They've been picked in a lot of polls to finish close to the bottom of the SEC. It could happen. They could also really surprise a lot of people and end up pretty high in the SEC, or they might just be a middle of the road team. But it's going to be interesting to see what Missouri does and how this affects their recruiting and everything else, because you know Missouri's athletic department's probably the best it's ever been right now. I'm not a Missouri alum. I don't follow them, so I could be wrong on this. And feel free to email me at royalmanreport@gmail.com and tell me how wrong I am. But you know, I think from an unbiased perspective, I think Missouri's going to be really interesting to watch this year, from football and basketball, because they have a chance to really establish themselves as a marquee athletics program. And they've moved to the best conference in sports as far as the college is concerned, and it'll be interesting to see how they establish themselves in the SEC.
Yeah, you know, I think in Mizzou's favor, that SEC East that they're in, I think, as they got put in the East, whichever division they're in is wide open. I mean, they're in there with Florida, who's down. Tennessee, who's really down. South Carolina, many were saying, was a national championship contender, but I believe they lost their first game.
No, they beat Vandy, but they didn't look good doing it.
Oh, it was very close, right?
Yeah.
So in that case, I mean, probably doesn't look that great for them, but a win's a win, I suppose. I think Vanderbilt's over in the East, too, and Vanderbilt's no better than Missouri, even as far as they've come over the last 5 to 10 years. And who else is in the East? I think it's Kentucky in the East. I don't think so. I think they're in the West. But and then Texas A&M is their rival. Is that right? Because I know each side is paired up with one rival or something. But point is, you know, I think for a first season in the SEC, I think things shake out pretty well for Mizzou, because I don't know that I see Florida and Tennessee and, you know, the rest of those teams, those SEC blue bloods that we've come to know, I don't know that I see them continue to be as down as they are. So Mizzou, if they want to make some runs, they should do it soon. But I mean, I think the SEC and the Big 12, I don't know that the gap is as far as people want to make it, especially, I don't know, it's weird because I think the middling teams in the SEC are about the same as the middling, you know, your Vanderbilts and your teams like that probably would be about the same place they are in the SEC. I think you see the difference in the top to the bottom. Their top is bigger than our top, and their bottom is bigger than the Big 12's bottom in terms of better teams. But, you know, I think they're pretty close in conferences, so I don't know if Mizzou will be incredibly overmatched. But I do think it's a different brand of football, not necessarily leaps and bounds better, but just different. And I don't know if Mizzou's going to be able to find as much success as they did in the Big 12, simply because they're going to have to adapt a lot to how that works, to how they're going to be able to play against those defenses and the depth that the SEC has. You just didn't see that kind of depth and that kind of defensive depth and ability in the Big 12, unfortunately. So it'll be a little bit of adjustment for them. It'll be interesting to see. Especially, and I think it's next week, actually, their game against Georgia. I mean, that's going to be the kicker right there. That's going to show you how well, because Georgia's not, I don't know if they're a national championship contender, I mean, but they're definitely an SEC contender, at least in that division. So it'll be good to kind of, that'll be a good gauge for MU, even if they win or lose, to see how well they stack up against Georgia, how close they can, how much they can compete. It'll be a good barometer. If they come out and they just get smoked off the field by Georgia, it's going to be a long season, Colby.
Well, it's it it's definitely going to be an interesting season for Mizzou. I'm very interested to see what they do. But it's definitely hard to it's a hard team to gauge. I'm trying to pull something up here and see how this is going to broadcast.
Troy lost sound.
I was trying to bring up something here, and I think I got it now. No, this isn't it. Never mind. I was gonna have some fun with the We Are Mizzou stuff, but I think I actually got an actual like pump video for Mizzou. So I don't know if you can hear it in the background or not, or if I just talk over it. But I was gonna do a little We Are Mizzou stuff. So hang on just a second. I might go quiet, but I'll be right back. So yeah, I a lot of people say that I'm biased towards KU, even though I'm not necessarily a KU fan. And then it's funny because I had one of the Twitter accounts that's Royal something, you know, that they hide behind a fake picture and a fake name and unfollows me about every other week because he says I say something against KU, which is funny because, yes, I'm a KU fan in the extent that I think their basketball coach is one of the nicest guys on the planet because I've dealt with him personally, and I would be a fan of his if he coached at Oklahoma, maybe not Texas, but if he coached it even at Oklahoma, who's a longtime rival of Nebraska, I would still root for Bill Self. No, I'm a huge Bill Self fan. I have no problem with admitting that. And
as am I.
Right, and well, of course you are. That's your school, so you should be. You know, I'm not a fan of my school's football coach. I don't like him. I wish he wasn't there. And hopefully, there's a time very soon that that he's not. But for the time being, it is what it is. But as far, you know, I think Gary Pinkel's a great coach, and I think if anybody can succeed in the SEC, I think it's going to be Pinkel. I've said for a long time, I think he was one of the best coaches in the Big 12. You know, I of course say K-State's got the best coach because without him, you've seen how bad that team was and what they've done with him and versus without him. So it'll be interesting to see, and I'm real excited to see all three local schools, and hopefully KU can overperform. Hopefully K-State can surprise a lot of people and rise to the top or near the top of the Big 12, and hopefully Mizzou does well in the SEC as well. I think it'd be really good for sports in this area for all three of those teams to not suck at all. So it'd be good to see them all be better than middle of the road teams.
No, I think there could be. Yeah, I mean, this could end up being a pretty good season for the local teams if Mizzou, if they do make a charge for that SEC East, and maybe Kansas can. So I think Kansas can definitely win four games. You know, and then maybe they surprise some people, win a couple, and maybe K-State repeats. But my guess is we'll probably have all three teams will be, you know, average, maybe a little bit better in a couple cases, and then KU's case probably below average. So. Not high hopes for the college football, at least in this season.
Well, we'll see. But I think on that note, it's almost 2 o'clock on Saturday. We will be doing our shows live on YouTube for the foreseeable future, at, starting at noon with the Kansas City Baseball Bowl, rolling right into the Echo Sports Reporter, or even having it as a segment if we don't want to talk about the team. But we're not time limited, so that's one of the great things. And we'll see what we can do with this and get you back to the shows you're used to with the great guests and what have you. It may take us a couple weeks, bear with us. But until then, for Michael Engel and all the great writers at echonetwork.com, make sure you check them out. For Jeffer, I'm Troy Olson, and we're out of here. Go Royals.